I, Donald John Trump, do solemnly swear
that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States.
The office of President of the United States.
Following a long and harrowing election season, Donald Trump became the 45th President of the United States on Friday. From White House Chief of Staff Reince Priebus to Speaker of the House Paul Ryan, President Trump will be surrounded by Wisconsinites during his time in office. Coming up in today's Behind the Headlines, we'll take a look at the role Wisconsin's elected officials will have in the next 4 years. I'm your host, Katie O'Connell. Thanks so much for listening today. There's plenty for the eyes to feast on when visitors take a walk inside Milwaukee's Warner Grand Theater. Built in 1930, it's home to a grand staircase, elegant lobby, ornate light fixtures, and portraits. But for the renovation of the theater to create a new home for the Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra, attention has now turned to one of the less noticed parts of the building, the wall behind the stage. Business reporter Tom Dakin, who covers commercial real estate, sat down with reporter Tom Content to explain why.
Hi, I'm Tom Content. I'm business reporter at the Journal Sentinel here with Tom Dakin, business reporter at the Journal Sentinel. How you doing, Tom?
Doing well. Hello, folks.
So just wanted to find out what you're up to this week. You've got something on the Warner Grand, but something mysterious.
Yes, something mysterious this way comes, as Ray Bradbury might say. The Warner Grand Theater, which has been empty since 1995, is going to be converted into the new performance hall for the Milwaukee Symphony, a story our colleague Jim Higgins broke back in December. What's new about this is we're now learning that in order to convert the symphony hall, or convert the theater into a symphony hall, they will actually have to take the back wall of the theater, which is this wall that faces North 2nd Street, and move it 30 feet. They're going to have to separate it from the building and literally move it very slowly 30 feet into North 2nd Street and then build an addition between the separated wall and the rest of the building.
What the heck?
Yeah. Well, they have to do this because the stage in the theater isn't big enough to accommodate a symphony orchestra. It's only about 10 to 15 feet wide because the theater opened in 1930. That's when vaudeville, a form of entertainment I'm sure you're familiar with, Tom, was on the decline. Movies were on the upswing. You need a much bigger stage. You could extend the stage forward, like remove some rows of seats and do it that way. But the problem is if you extend the stage forward, the people on the balcony, many of them are going to have their views cut off of the front of the stage, the new stage. And also by going forward, you might have to take out some of the truly beautiful, ornate features within that building, which would not just be an aesthetic loss, but from a practical standpoint could endanger the financing structure of the theater. And that's because MSO, Milwaukee Symphony, is going to obtain state and federal historic tax credits for historic preservation. And they need to try and keep that building, both interior and exterior, as intact as possible to get those credits.
So you can't just build a new wall.
You can't just build a new wall. No. The exterior wall, by the way, if you drive past or walk past the North 2nd Street, is notable in that it's not just a blank wall. They've actually has some adornments to it, some terracotta on the outside of the wall, which was done, obviously, when the theater was built in 1930. So the National Park Service, which oversees the tax credits program, really wants them to keep that wall intact as much as they can, and that's what's going on. Now, the city is getting involved by providing a $750,000 grant just for helping cover the expense of moving the wall.
Wow.
Yeah, it's going to be about a $75 to $80 million project. That's all being raised privately by MSO, but
yeah,
the city is helping out with that grant, which the Redevelopment Authority just approved and now is going to go before the Common Council for its review.
Wow. And the wall is probably not as exciting for symphony goers to see as some of the other stuff inside the grand, but it's really something to see.
Yeah, well, the Grand is gorgeous. I'd never been in it. It shut down in 1995. I was in town, but I had never gone to a movie there. And Marcus Corporation, which operates the property, has maintained it beautifully. I mean, it has this gorgeous Art Deco lobby. It has all these interior adornments, including portraits of people who look like they're coming out of the French colonial period before, you know, Louis and Marie Antoinette lost their heads, so to speak. It really is beautifully maintained in the interior, but moving that wall is a crucial part of this project. And it can be done. That method that would be used, detaching it, placing it on some rails, and very, very slowly moving it, that's done to move historic buildings. So okay. It's not like this is an unprecedented thing. The other thing that's interesting about all this is North 2nd Street is going to be narrowed between Wisconsin and Wells, where the wall goes into, will be narrowed down to one lane each way for traffic. Currently, there are three traffic lanes as well as parking lanes. They'll have to narrow the street. The city's also going to get involved by spending a couple million dollars reconstructing that street. And the big expense there is they're going to have to relocate underground utilities to accommodate the wall being moved, the building being built out, et cetera, et cetera. So read all about it at JS Online, or if you're a fossil like me, in the print edition of the Journal Sentinel.
All right. Thanks, Tom.
You bet. Thank you.
Check out Tom's story on the grand renovation in the Journal Sentinel, or head to the Land and Space page on jsonline.com. Thanks for joining us with that story, Tom and Tom. Coming up later in today's show, we'll hear from Green Bay Packers beat writers Michael Cohen and Bob McGinn. Stay tuned for that. Now let's take a look at the political story I mentioned before. Wisconsinites will play a role in this new White House administration, but what exactly does that mean? Watchdog columnist Daniel Weiss, columnist Christian Snyder, and reporter Mary Spacuzza discussed the possibilities with editor Greg Borowski during this week's JS on Politics show.
But Christian, let's start with you on how, you know, some of these Wisconsinites who have some really powerful positions and key positions going forward, that either to help advance Trump's agenda or places where they may be at odds with him. And the first, let's start with Ryan Tsipras, who is in what some consider the second most powerful position in the world, the chief of staff to the president of the United States. What does Ryan Tsipras bring to Trump? I mean, why is he so essential now going forward?
Well, he obviously brings loyalty. He was, you know, he's taken a lot of heat from conservatives within the party for kind of standing by Trump through all this and, you know, through all the kind of intemperate things that Trump has done. But he's already shown himself to be kind of an important linchpin here in this government, even though Trump hasn't taken over yet. You remember, you know, he's part of the Wisconsin mafia, as it were, you know, his connections with Paul Ryan. And we've seen that at work. New York Times just reported that when Paul Ryan needed some help, you know, kind of killing this plan to kill the ethics office, he went to Ryan Tsipras, who then went to Trump and had him tweet, you know, something that Republicans shouldn't do this, which then a lot of Republicans backed off. So you're kind of seeing the role of Ryan Tsipras already as kind of a facilitator between Congress and Trump. And I'm sure it's going to go the other way around. When Trump needs something from Congress, I think he'll probably be the conduit as well.
Yeah, so go ahead, Dan.
Well, I was just going to say that the question that's been raised this week repeatedly, including that in that New York Times story, is Ryan Tsipras up to being essentially the Trump whisperer? Is he the guy who's going to bring stability, and is he going to be able to help Trump make, as the phrase is, America sane again? And that seems to be the role that people are asking of him. The question is, can he do that?
Yeah, well, historically, that's a very hot seat kind of position. I mean, it's not necessarily a long tenured person who's going to be there for 4 years or 8 years, but do you think Reince can do that? I mean,
you know,
is that essential?
Yeah, he's never held elective office, and he's never really done this. His main role at the party has been raising money. So I think it's a big question, just like many things with the Trump administration. It's a big question as to whether he can do it or not.
Right, let's look at some of the other folks. You know, Paul Ryan, we just mentioned, he's obviously Speaker of the House. Is he in sync with Donald Trump on a lot of these issues? And is his caucus in sync with Donald Trump?
I think that is a lingering question that we'll have to see how it plays out. Obviously, they were not in sync during much of the campaign. They've, you know, said they're moving forward and putting that behind behind them, I think, you know, but as they have different policy issues or different approaches, I think that we're going to see them not being eye to eye.
But anything that Trump wants to accomplish has to go through Paul Ryan. The question is, how much would he give in exchange for what he wants to get from the Trump administration?
Yeah, I mean, Christian, do you have a sense on that, or what's your take in terms of, I mean, there's these areas where they disagree, whether it's on not just Paul Ryan, but the caucus on Russia, for instance, other issues. Is this going to be a bumpy road, or are folks going to say, like, this is our opportunity, we finally have full control, let's just get along and get things done?
Yeah, I mean, in some respects, Ryan's is going to be able to help smooth that communication. But, you know, Trump is his own, you know, press person. He's got his Twitter account out there, and he'll say things. He'll in interviews, he'll say things on Twitter. And Paul Ryan has no idea that they're coming. Like, you know, last week when he said, you know, everybody's going to have health insurance, I'm sure that probably caught Paul Ryan off guard quite a bit. So I think, you know, Paul Ryan and Ryan's Priebus are going to have a lot of cleanup duty to do in the next few years. So, you know, maybe he can help facilitate that relationship.
For more of our political coverage, visit jsonline.com/politics. We have a full political podcast as well. The JS on Politics podcast is available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Audioboom. If you root for the green and gold, odds are you'll be glued to your TV today. What should Packers fans look for as the team continues its run toward the Super Bowl? Beat writers Bob McGinn and Michael Cohen have some answers.
Let's take a look at the Falcons. It's been, what, week 8, I think, was when we were down there? Maybe? I can't remember at this point. It was a real exciting game, 33-32. The Falcons won. It was basically sort of what people are forecasting for this weekend. I read online that there were only, I think, like 6 combined scoring drives that didn't end in points the whole game. It was just back and forth with Rodgers and Matt Ryan putting up big, big numbers. And at the end, there was a little bit of a blown coverage by the Packers that ended up costing them. But before we get into any more details about the game, let's look at the personnel changes since the last meeting between these two.
Okay, on offense, there's not much change. There's one big one, really, and that's Tevin Coleman did not play against Green Bay with a hamstring. He was replaced by diminutive Teron Ward. Ward played okay. He's 5'6". He played pretty well in that game, relieving Devontae Freeman. But Coleman now is the real deal. Boy, in the last 4 games, Mike, total yards from scrimmage, Freeman and Coleman have 884. That's 221 a game.
Jeez.
48% of their offense. You know, they've gained in those 4 games. They got 1,845 yards. So Coleman is that second-round pick from Indiana 2 years ago, 2015. He's listed at 6'1". He's 5'11 and a half, about 210, 215. You know, he's not an elusive guy. He's a little bit like Ryan Grant, a player you probably haven't seen a lot of, Mike, but a tough guy. A one-cut downhill guy, not great elude or anything, but he hits it hard, and he has tremendous speed. Ryan Grant ran around 4.45 coming out. This guy's 4.39, so he can hit it. And the Packers caught a break when he did not play. And this guy, I mean, just look at his numbers. Against Carolina, he rushed 9 for 90 3 weeks ago. He had a game earlier against Denver. He caught 4 passes for 132. They tried to put a linebacker on him, and he just ate him up. He's a good back. He's going to play about 30% of the time. Freeman, the other guy, the Packers saw him. Packers did a good job on him in that game.
Yeah, they did.
Last 4 games, he's got 333 rushing, 212 receiving. He's a dangerous cat.
Now, one of the staples of the Packers defense this year has been Joe Thomas, the inside linebacker, handling running back coverage. He's done it all season. I've talked to him a lot about his process of getting ready for these guys that are sometimes faster than him, although size-wise, he actually stacks up okay against them. Is he a type of linebacker that might be able to stay with these guys, or is that asking for trouble the way you mentioned the Denver game?
It's a very good point, Mike, and it's some of that defensive success will come right down to that matchup. Joe Thomas is playing with a back problem. We know that. He has to play because they have no confidence right now in Blake Martinez.
Correct.
Right? it's a big matchup, and I don't know how Thomas is going to fare against either one of them.
I think they're going to give him a shot to try and see how it goes. I don't know what – I mean, I guess you would put a safety on him, right, if you didn't want a linebacker?
Yeah. You play more dime.
Play more dime.
But they're going to run against that dime, obviously, and even on third and six or something, they might run if they see that dime. So they're a very diverse attack. Any other change on offense? Not really. The only team in the league with five offensive linemen to start every game.
One other change. Jacob Tammy's on IR now.
He got hurt early in the Green Bay game.
Oh, it was the Green Bay game that he got hurt. Okay.
Separated shoulder, out for the year. His fourth snap in that game.
What have scouts thought of Austin Hooper, this rookie from Stanford?
They like him, and I like him too. Boy, he made that catch beautifully in his hands on the left side against that Seattle. I mean, he just tremendous hand placement and so fluid. 4.7 flat. He's not a burner, but you can't ignore him.
And then their number two tight end is Levine Toilolo, probably the only guy Julius Peppers will ever look up to on a football field, because he's, what, 6'8", 6'7", and a half?
Yeah.
He's a monster.
He's okay.
Yeah.
Ryan, I mean, everybody's talking about Ryan, and they should. He gets the ball out fast. He's accurate. He's courageous. And he's on point, man.
So before we move on to the defense, from what you saw on tape against Seattle, what did you think of the offense, the way that they were operating?
Well, we need to talk about Julio Jones, right? He's hurting. He's in and out of the lineup. He's taking himself out. He's just not as dominant. And we know how the Packers played last time with Gunter underneath and Dix over the top. So, I mean, he'll be ready to go, but will he get re-injured and will he have to fall out? Probably.
It's a turf toe, right?
Yeah.
So the one question I've been getting all week from people on Twitter or email or whatever is, can they do the same thing, matching him with Gunter, and get away with it? And the one thing that I've kept pointing out with people over and over and over again is one of the reasons why Dez Bryant had more success than Odell Beckham did is because the Cowboys were able to run the football. The Giants could not, which means that they could keep both safeties back and dedicate somebody to shadowing over the top to help Gunter. When the Cowboys ran the ball with Elliott and they couldn't do that, you have to bring one of those safeties into the box, and then you can't guarantee Gunter help over the top on every play. So if Tevin Coleman and Freeman can run the ball similar to the way Dallas did, or at least with some efficacy, then you're not going to be able to give Gunter that type of help against Jones, however healthy he is.
Stay tuned for additional Packers coverage online and in print. Of course, you can find that at jsonline.com/Packers. And good luck to the green and gold. On that note, I'm off to get ready for a game day viewing party. Thanks so much for listening to this week's Behind the Headlines. I'm your host, Katie O'Connell. Tune in next week for more.